I must say that I am very grateful for this opportunity. You know how all these meetings start. I am very grateful to given me opportunity. But I am really grateful for this opportunity to study Gebser for presentation, not for yourself to read. You know, when we scan and we read and we kind of recognize that we know already. No, to read as if we do not know. And that makes all the difference. And I would suggest that everybody of us would do some kind of presentation. I would like to change our format, that not one person is presenting, but we can take different structures or different topics or different aspects and make presentations, studies in depth. Would that be acceptable? Would you like to do that? Gebser deserves this. More I read, more I recognize the intuition he has. He relies on his intuition. He is not at all a scientific mind, in a sense. Basically, when I tried to make notes, I found myself underlining on every page so many things that it's impossible to really go through. One has to read Gebser and very carefully everything what he says, because he is using his intuition. And you can see that he is very mental, very structured being, and at the same time he got something which is very strong in him, and he is following that, and he trusts that. He goes into difficult positions many times, and he comes out in a very luminous way, and I like that. He is courageous to go into every difficult corner, to take most incomprehensible issues and find his way out. It makes sense if you have that intuition. You like it. You like a challenge of looking into the unknown material, because you have a drive. He has a drive. Now, today I wanted to focus mainly on magic and mythical structure. And actually, I cannot imagine that we will go into mental. I would like somebody to make a good presentation on mental structure. It's most important. I think it's his major focus, major finding of perspectival world and what is a perspectival world emerging. But it is a big issue, mental structure, and it requires maybe one full day only on mental structure with several presentations. It would be very useful. I do not know who can do that. Maybe somebody would like volunteer. Nobody wants. Everybody wants to go in a perspective already. And integral is easy. You can, you know, move wherever you want, and everything looks like integral. But it is not so, according to Gebser, at least. I'm joking. So when we saw last time this vision of archaic oneness, or archaic identity, as he calls it, identity of the spirit with its environment. There is no yet distinction between the soul and environment. It's one and the same. Adam and Eve live in the paradise. They don't see the difference between themselves, among the trees. Everything is one and wonderful being. But then, when they tried the apple, they see suddenly the difference, and they are banished, and they have to face another environment where in sweat and blood they have to earn their bread. They have to face another world, and that from their magic structure starts. Magic structure is basically a fall from the paradise of that identity into another world which is different. But the soul, the spirit, yet does not have any other means of acting in the world only by identity. And that creates that one-dimensional structure of magic consciousness, which is quite interesting, because they treat the whole world as their own body. Still, they feel the difference. There is something else going on in that world which is not the same. They can see it. But they can't relate to it otherwise than in the archaic structure. the consciousness is still rather in the world, not in the man. The consciousness is not yet emerged in man. Makes sense? They are used to this oneness. It's not in them. It's everywhere, including them. They are part of this environment, though it is not theirs. Now, this of course creates an impulse in them to free themselves from it. So witchcraft, sorcery, totem, taboo, it's his quotation, are the natural means of freeing himself, man, from nature. Now, when we see this magic structure, we could see that it is a full identification of the inner spirit with the outer nature on the archaic basis. It's a spiritual nature, or spiritualized nature, which is not spiritual in its being. But in the consciousness of man, it must be so. Do you see the problem? So all the symbols of the outer nature are taken as spiritual symbols. The sun, the ocean, the stars, the sky, everything has a spiritual meaning to this consciousness. Then, when man moves into mythical structure, he will use that background for his primal myth to emerge. And this is very important for us, because we do not understand why Vedic rishis, for example, use this symbolism of nature. They speak of the sun as the manifestation of the truth, the ocean as the infinity of being, and so on and so forth. The mythical structure used the previous imagery of the nature as a spiritual environment for its own language, for the words to emerge. There was no other means. There are many speculations on it, many speculations of this kind, why Vedic rishis used this symbolism and not any other symbolism. There was no other symbolism. What I noticed, and it is my discovery, because Gebser does not speak about this directly, only indirectly throughout, is a very interesting dynamism. And I must tell you that spiral dynamics helped me to it just suggested this dynamism of spiral in this vision. And it's very interesting. I wanted to conclude with it, but I will start with it. There is an interesting shift. Look at this. We have archaic oneness of the inner with the outer, complete identification. Then we have a domination of the outer environment over the soul. The soul takes it seriously, takes it spiritually, true. It is not yet emerged. Individual is not there. It's egoless, it is timeless and spaceless environment. Then, the domination of this nature over the individual changes in the mythical structure into opposite, the emergence of the soul.
The emergence
of the soul, psychic. It's interesting that he is using even the terminology of Sri Aurobindo, psychic. The emergence of the soul and remembrance and recollection of the origin. Suddenly we wake up, we are here. There is the soul here. The soul which remembers the origin. It's not the nature. We have to get rid of nature and get out of it as soon as possible. Back to the origin. Leave the manifestation. Manifestation only is a symbol of our own soul adventure. And we have to go back. There is a journey. The journey over the ocean to another shore. The journey to discover, to find your soulmate. Narcissism, to look into the mirror of your soul, to fall in love with yourself, to go back, to fall back to that original archaic structure. then there is again shift from this individual dominating or kind of facing the nature, there is a shift back to the magic structure in terms of mental. What happens here is very interesting. There is a shift and believe in the outer nature, not in the inner nature as in the magic structure, but in the outer nature. Outer nature itself is what we are. The body is all what man is, and all the relations of this body and other bodies, and this body is the soul, intelligent being. The soul is nothing but the intelligence in this body, according to Aristotle, which is the soul. So the soul is overtaken by the nature from outside. All our technologies, science, is nothing but this magic structure developed in the outer sense. Computer, television, telephone, aeroplane, transportation is this magic of nature, where we want to free ourselves by the means of magic of nature, not through our soul. It's all that what Shivindu called barbarism in the West, though it is so well developed, barbarism. All our comforts, all our supermarkets, is nothing but this magic of nature, giving you all the opportunities to live mechanical life of the body. Makes sense. The individual, the soul, is overtaken. It is presented to this nature as ego sense, which can now think objectively, deal with the nature objectively. It is verifiable, it's scientific. Moreover, all the other psychic or mythical structures such as meditation are also, should be verifiable now. Yes? They are also taken only in that sense, what would they do to the body? All these things are put on you in SLN and people are measured what kind of influence meditation makes on your body. How you can become more productive in your kind of, if you are engaged in your inner life. Inner life is nothing but an imagination, a hypnosis of some kind, which helps this magic to happen. This is my big discovery for myself. For the first time I saw that why the mental structure is so ruthless, so... Why Sri Aurobindo spoke about it as a barbarism? Some kind, because it keeps us tight to the magic of the outer nature. It does not allow us to emerge in the soul, in our inner reality. Now, what could be then the integral structure? What do you think? So if this dynamism is there kept, so if we start with domination of spiritual nature over our soul, then we dominate it in the inner sense with our soul mythical structure, then it dominates us with the outer image, what would be then integral? The soul again comes back in a free nature. That's what it is in. It's no more archaic. It's not a full identification. It's a consciousness of unity, of a free soul in a free nature. If you want to say something, you always are welcome to interrupt and come in.
Personally, I think what you're sharing is very touching. This is going somewhere right
yes.
through it.
Yes.
That's all.
Now we are moving into the particular studies of magic structure of consciousness, and we will see what it has, what Gebso presents. The two major characteristics, that is interwovenness, it is his word, interconnectedness of the soul with nature, which implies egolessness in relation, timelessness and spacelessness in perception. An enormous attempt of the spirit to free oneself, it is his quotation, or to distinguish, separate oneself in being and power, when there is a complete identification in consciousness with the surrounding. It's nearly impossible to imagine what it would be for the magic structure, what you have to do in order to free yourself and to bring the consciousness into the individual in this particular projection of archaic consciousness into another surrounding. It's impossible to imagine what kind of power it had to be to bring that awareness. And he says about an enormous attempt, and all this witchcraft and magic and ceremonies and rituals are those attempts to really distinguish oneself from what is going on in nature. So I'm engaged in a ritual before I do the hunting. So I bring the arrow of the and put into the neck of the drawn on the sand antelope. And then I go hunting and I shoot that arrow exactly into the neck of the antelope in the same spot. I bring antelope back, I disengage the picture, remove the arrow, and then I am ready to eat. This is the attempt of that fully identified spirit with the nature to disengage itself.
There must be, in that struggle, also a sharp awareness of opposition,
right,
of evil, of combat. It must be a war of some kind, because previously, if it was all one, undifferentiated, then there is the acceptance of fate and whatever happens. But if there is this struggle going on now to conquer, then it seems that that could be the origin of our preoccupation with evil forces and asuras.
Yeah, it's late. Gebser is more subtle with this. It's interesting how he deals with this.
No,
asuras are much earlier than ours.
Yes.
They are all there. But the thing is, the subtlety of Gebser is that he doesn't see that yet. He speaks about the opposition, kind of a surprise, yes, a contradiction of some kind, which is not yet contradiction, because in consciousness of archaic identification, it overwhelms the contradiction. The fight is rather unconscious. It's not yet fully, the awareness of you being separate from nature is not yet there. There is no yet myth. There is no yet word in that particular sense as a savior of the soul. There is no contradiction in full sense. Me as a hunter, antelope, arrow, sun, ritual, forest, is one being. There is no difference between me and antelope and the arrow. There's something else going on. This is a first awakening. And that's what he says. He's more subtle. He doesn't give it full blast of opposition because it is not yet there. It is there for us with rational structure who see it from this distance. We can see that, yes, there was an opposition of the environment and the projection of the spirit. Now we can see it because we went through the whole process. But in that man, there was not yet that opposition. And he speaks about this. that if we go back and try to see with his eyes, we would see something incomprehensible. We cannot comprehend it with our mind. It's another dimension, one dimensional world. That's what Gibson says.
But there's a different way of being with the aspect.
Yes.
And so on. I think I'm looking for a subtle thing. You could say developmental theories.
Right.
And often you see, let's say, jumping. Well, now it's archaic, and now it's mythic or magic.
Right.
There is such a fluidity
in
which you might be moving between the characters. You might be moving into a very primal archaic part of me that is unevolved. And the next thing I know, I'm in a very evolved aspect. I'm not conscious of that.
Actually, Gebser is always dealing with. He is so subtle, he says that he doesn't want to do that, those jumps in definitions. He wants to see the integral picture, the whole, holistic. And for him, archaic is the only guarantee for us to move in any direction. And he says it doesn't matter if in your mental research or your mental perspective, you will move away, so to say, astray. You can't. Because the archaic basis of being will bring you always back. So you can't really escape this archaic. It's here. It's the sense of being. You see, the sense of being cannot disappear, whatever you do. The sense of living is within magic structure. The sense of experiencing the soul of the origin is in the mythical structure. And the sense of presenting, conceptualizing, is in the mental structure. So mental structure is not able to experience or to live or to be. It's not meant for that. It's meant to present the living experience and being. And it is not within it. It's very important to see. And he saw it. Actually, it's a great liberation. Because then you know, that's what we need. We need to free, as he says, to cut off ourselves from time. That's why we took time in spatial terms in the mental structure. That's why I thought mental structure deserves really particular attention in this sense. We could see many interesting things there. But with this view, of course, with this view. And I agree with you, archaic structure is, and that's the book is called, The Ever-Present Origin, is that archaic structure. It's ever-present. You can't really deny its presence. It's there, and it will be there, whatever you do. But there is a mutation of consciousness, or there is an evolution of consciousness within this kind of event. Event of projection of this archaic structure into different environment. I must underline this all the time, because that makes all the sense. If there would be no other environment, there would be no fall. If there would be no darkness, no lower nature or something where that projection was to be made, there would be no evolution or manifestation of the divine. And when we come to the mythical structure, I will deal with that more, because there are more things to look into, major myths. Because myths were built on that previous magic perception of nature.
Is that going to the development of children? Are they related to these stages? Because I've heard these related to Bhakti Raja.
Yes, he mentions it, by the way, as if he knows that, yes? But I don't remember him developing anything of the kind. He mentions that we can always identify these stages with child's development.
It's somehow easier to...
Yeah, it is very true in a way.
...go back to one's own child or children
and see... Very true. Actually, if we bring Stanislav Grof, when we come to Ken Wilber, mm-hmm. at least, we will see that interesting also paradigm of the embryonic life. And embryonic life itself can be considered as archaic. Yes, because it's our life, it's our body, our consciousness is involved there and went through all the stages of evolution from the beginning of time. We carry within this body all the memory of that evolution. We experienced it in the womb. And that also, embryonic life was separated by into four different sections, three, called the matrices. And the fourth one is being born, yes, to undergo the pain of birth. It's very similar in a way, if you look into this. To be born is this mental structure, narrowing down, you know, presenting something which is real in different terms, cutting off from life into another dimension of individual life. So, I'm sure we are dealing with the same reality all the time. We see it everywhere, but we don't recognize it somehow. Yes, with this magic structure, this attempt is translated in such actions as spell curses, magic manipulations, interaction with subliminal forces of nature to influence weather, health, healing is here, it's also magic. Events, hunting ceremonies, sacrifices, rituals, initiations, witchcraft, etc., etc. In our age, it is translated in terms of technology, which represents the attempt to liberate man in a mechanical way from the mechanical enslavement of nature, in the body, vital and partially in the mind. The Tower of Babel is the mythical image of this magic attempt. Basically, that was it. There was the whole nation was coming together to try to reach the heaven by the means of the earth. And we know what happened. It didn't work.
It is still happening.
It is still going on, yes.
I always think of Dubai as the
Dubai. Yes, it's kind of Dubai.
From that angle, how to look at Mother's quote about all of it, the Tower of Babel in reverse.
Yes, it's interesting because it makes all the difference. Because if you transform from the self and not from the outer nature, from the magic structure, then it is altogether another story. That's why psychic transformation is first, spiritual second, and final supramental is last of the nature. Nature is to be transformed, but through our self-finding, not through our self-loss. Now, none of these structures are answer to this integral. Yes? If we take mythical and we find our origin, we fall back, we are not really manifesting the world. Yes? We are not manifesting the spirit in that what he wanted to be manifested, why he, so to say, projected himself into this other environment. It was for that sake to manifest itself in unity. So falling back, finding oneself is not enough. We have to disengage ourselves in mental structure. We have to free ourselves from time, from ourselves, from the nature. And that's what happens when we see all those first manifestations in Greek culture, those beautiful bodies, objectively valued, seen in objective light, that open forehead, as he says, that beautiful face, that mystic smile of happiness on the face, of freedom from that mythical, difficult self-finding, traveling through the inner countries, through darkness, through the ocean, through turmoils, to find oneself or one's soulmate. It's a very troublesome self-finding of the mythical structure, not easy. We can see this later in the Vedas, what is happening there, how many battles soul is to undergo, how many gods are to be invoked to help you. Now here suddenly man comes out into the mental structure with this liberation. He recognizes himself as a being for the first time, objectively existing being. This is the magic of the mental structure. Now, we continue with our magic structure. So, man in this magic structure is always attending, hearing, hearkening, feeling, and responding to a bigger body of environment as his own, through spells, curses, magic formulas, and so on. He has powers of clairvoyance, clairaudience, power of telepathy. It is his bigger body. Now, Gebser brings interesting examples of in the animal world. Yes, all these flocks and herds and ant hills. Ant who is far away from the hill and something happens in another corner, every ant knows what happened. And they react in the same time as if they are one body. How do they know that? They have a group soul. They have something of that magic structure vividly present. The same with tribes and flocks. The individuals are ready to sacrifice themselves without any question. There is no question. There is no fear. There is nothing of the kind. When you see how these buffaloes or antelopes are crossing the rivers and there are crocodiles, they don't care. Why? Because they are a flock or they are a herd. So they will go through, and those individuals will sacrifice themselves for crocodiles to make this passage possible, without any fear, happily. We can't understand this, you know, because we are formed already in individual sense. For us it's impossible to imagine. But such things happen also in the war. You can see this, and there is an extreme turmoil, a crisis. Such behavior of magic structure comes up and the self-sacrifice becomes possible of individual to the collective. In later mythical and mental structures, we can see this as organizations, religious sects, philosophical schools, organizations and collective bodies, groups of ethnos, nation, country. These are all projections of the magic structure, with all their group identity and symbols. Makes sense. You can see how this kind of oneness is present throughout in our life, and how it is important, and how it is changing and evolving. and become something else from the beginning of time. These are two quotations of Gebser. In a sense, one may say that in this structure, consciousness was not yet in man himself, but still resting in the world. Look at this beautiful formulation. It took me time, really. It was so puzzling for me to look into this. It makes full sense now. How could you say that consciousness was out in the, resting in the world and not in man? Makes no sense. But it makes sense if you look at this, that there was, the consciousness itself was the world. And man himself was bringing this awareness of the world as himself. He was not having yet himself separate from the world. World was him. That's why the consciousness was resting with the world and not in man.
The work of Conrad Lorenz in Ethology focuses exactly on this concept of consciousness as information exchange in nature. And human behavior and symbolism is just the same thing, but on another level of more objective consciousness. Consciousness becomes more objective in the human being, but the same behavior patterns, which are now symbolized in organizations and ritual and success things, are there in the animal kingdom at different levels of sophistication. The same kinds of behaviors, the same patterns are already pre-existent in nature.
Must be so. And by the way, science would be delighted to discover that magic within this objective world, because that is exactly what science does. It is involved in this recreation of magic and sees human being as only a part of this process. There is no soul. It's an imagination. Only ego sense, yes, but no soul. Soul cannot be accepted by science. Science deals with magic. And that's why we will see that all these people, they will be discovering that in the past and now and always, they will look and focus on the magic structure. And it is very valid in the Gebserian vision. If it is cut off, if it is the only vision, then it becomes something else. So the gradual transfer of this consciousness which streams towards him and which he must assimilate from his standpoint and the awakening world, which he gradually learns to confront, That is the subtlety of Gebser, which I was mentioning before. He doesn't confront immediately, he learns slowly to confront. He has to emerge out of this identification. And in the confrontation, there is something hostile. You see, he's not kind of making it immediately hostile. It's something that man must master. It's a puzzle for him. How come he is different from his surrounding? What happened to him? Why he is here? Man replies to the forces streaming towards him with his own corresponding forces. He stands up to nature. He tries to exorcise her, to guide her. He strives to be independent of her. Then he begins to be conscious of his own will. Witchcraft and sorcery, totem and taboo are the natural means by which he seeks to free himself from the transcendent power of nature. Look at this transcendent power of nature. It's beautiful. It's an intuitional statement, because in that magic structure it is so, by which his soul strives to materialize within him. By which his soul strives to materialize within him and to become increasingly conscious of itself. the soul tries to materialize within him. Another statement. These are gems of some kind. You can't really interpret them immediately. You have to really look into it deeper, what it means. How can soul materialize within him? Materialize, what it means? Nonsense. All this, from the yogic point of view, from mythical point of view, it makes very little sense. But then, when from the mother's point of view, from integral yoga's point of view, it makes full sense. Now, he speaks of transitions. Transition from archaic to magic, from magic to mythical structure, quite a bit, and from mythical to mental. And these transitions could take long periods of time and many different stages and could be studied at length. And we can see how it is appearing and then it is being again interpreted in the previous structure and again reinterpreted in a new emerging structure. And all these varieties are there. On time, he speaks in this way. We can, however, locate approximately the time of the mutation from the magic to the mythical structure, since a consciousness of time, however rudimentary, would have had to manifest itself before the mutation was possible. And it's also an interesting statement. In accord with the magic structure, this would have been more a sense of time than a knowledge of it, a time sense closely attuned to nature. When we speak of time, we are also speaking of soul. It's another profound statement. When we speak of time, we are also speaking of soul. And I think it makes full sense by studying Gyatso and slowly seeing where this time factor emerges, and studying Vedas, and studying what, you remember, we discussed in our sessions of this sacrifice of extracting the delight out of the being and offering it to the higher forces.
Yeah, but it's from the materialization of the soul.
Yes.
You just think of it that man had to die.
No, we are stepping out of time in the mental structure.
From one thing to the next, to the next. Even if you want it, in some American films they are stuck somewhere for years, yes, and then suddenly they have time. And sometimes you can see what would happen if you would have time. But you don't have. You are so much linked to work, earning, and responsibility, and And this is interesting, what happens then when you find time? How this archaic comes back to you as a thing which you want to live? This is not magic in the sense of being unconscious, but in having this link, this subtle link to that soul which is outside of you, where you understand it in another way. No?
No,
because things are going on now, there, in these trees, forever, in nature, you don't have the link. Oh my God, I have to go home, yes, this road, and then bakery, and whatever. And you are living in such a way.
In the outer world you live, yes.
Yeah.
Outer being. And you have outer responsibilities. And then what happens in the West, that all these people who have everything what they want, good salary, good job, not much working, they are getting sick and they don't want to come to work. Why? Because they abused the time factor, the soul factor. They abused by the spatial outward environment, by presentation on presentation on presentation. Nothing makes sense anymore. You know, all these symbols, only symbols. We live as symbols among symbols and it loses its purpose. more. It has its purpose, to free ourselves, to become an individual. It's a transition. It's not the final goal.
Yeah. I would like to bring the focus back to this idea of soul and time.
Right.
From the evolutionary perspective, which is moving away from what you're talking about, back towards a subjective soul point of view, in Gerson, in Gerson's philosophy, and in Sri Aurobindo's and in Gerson's, there is the idea of time as duration. And it is, in Gerson, it's intensity, time as intensity. But what is that intensity, or what is that duration? It is the being of the self of things. It takes, for Gerson, in order to have a true consciousness of the reality of things, we can intuitively identify with the energy, time, duration of the being of the thing. So when you look then at what Sri Aurobindo has for that idea, is that duration or intensity of the thing itself is its swabhava, it is its inner nature becoming itself. What is that other than the will, or the soul, or the essence of the thing? And so if we take that subjective point of view towards things, towards living things, each living thing has its own necessary energetic and intensity of unfolding.
What Rod is saying is very, very... if you look into that, the intensity of being of the self is itself time as a force. Force manifesting itself in terms of this manifestation. It is the self which is manifesting itself in manifestation in this intensity. And he speaks in the same way. They both share energia, you can see here. And to that extent, they are separable. They are both pre-forms of matter. Now, it's another puzzling, completely statement. They are both pre-forms of matter, time and the soul. Just look at that. I can't really believe it. I really cannot believe he spoke about this. It must be intuition, because it makes no sense. Unless you know Sri Aurobindo and you know where Sri Aurobindo was leading us and what Mother did in the body. You can't really say it. What it... or maybe you can. I don't know.
this is evidence of the unity of thought in the emergence of the integral. Because each of these individuals who is breaking through into the integral subjective, whether it's Bergson or Sri Aurobindo or another, they have a similar perspective. They're describing reality from the same point of view. It's a consciousness that's emerging. It doesn't need to have a human identity necessarily.
So we will return in a moment, he says, to this affinity or possible identity. Here we would note that whereas the distinguishing characteristic of the magic structure was the emergent awareness of nature, the essential characteristic of the mythical structure is the emergent awareness of soul. Magic man's sleep-like consciousness of natural time is the precondition for mythical man's coming to awareness. As for itself. So the magic structure deals with this natural emergence of awareness of the nature. Awareness of the nature emerges by identity with archaic structure. Man deals as an instrumentation, or his consciousness is engaged in in this self-awareness of nature. And then he emerges as somebody else, someone else, different from nature. This remarkable and deeply inveterate impulse to be free from the miracles, taboos, forbidden names, which, if we think back to the archaic period, represents in the magic a falling away from once perceived totality, this urge to freedom and the constant need to be against something resulting from it, because only this being against creates separation and with it possibilities of consciousness, may be the answering reaction of man set adrift on earth to the power of the earth. That's why the projection was made into another environment, he says. In other words, it may be curse, it may be blessing, we do not know, omission. In any case, it may mean whoever wishes to prevail over the earth must liberate himself from its power. Well, this is a very common, in a way, statement of that time, and it was mainly misunderstood, and is still misunderstood by everybody who doesn't see the whole picture. What is freedom from earth? What is freedom from nature? Why it is there? Why we are moving in that direction can be misinterpreted very easily as an abuse, and so on and so forth. And truly speaking, mental structure abuses the whole earth, and the crisis which we are coming in, it's because of that. But it seems it was indispensable passage for individualization, and there was no other way, it seems. Now, I tried to look into the mythical structure as a transition towards the mental, from the magic towards the mental. From the hearing of magic structure to concrete and objective seeing in the mental consciousness, man must undergo one mutation of the mythical structure, where he perceives himself as a soul located in the heart, bringing out the imagery.
He uses the adjective as a noun.
All right. Of the origin in the primal myth, and gaining the ability of self-expression in the word, which is already an individualized expression, though still of the universal nature, the word. We will come to it now closely. What is mythical? What is the emergent of the language, word, soul?
The imaginary consciousness.
Yes, imaginary. So the self-expression in the heart by the word builds up gradually a mentality in man. It individualizes him more and more until he becomes ready to perceive himself as a separate being, to see himself objectively in the mental structure. So the transition which I'm kind of defining, look at this beautiful usage of Gyatso: feeling, hearing, speaking, imagining, thinking, seeing.
It's important to recognize that that is imaginary consciousness.
Right.
The being is not conscious of what is objectively.
Right.
It's conscious of what it imagines to be.
Yes, but we cannot know it in the rational structure, because we imagine differently nowadays. That imagination of the soul is a reality, says Gyatso. Full reality. The myth, which we refer to as myth now, is not the myth for the soul. It's a translation of the experience of the soul in terms of magic imagery. Imagery is taken from the magic structure. And that is the answer why the Vedic Rishis used it. I finally got it. Because I always thought they were hiding their knowledge by the symbolism of nature. No, they were not hiding, they were using it. They were using that which was already established there before, and they just naturally took it and used it in the most natural way as the language emerged, word emerged. It had to use some imagery. So imagery of the outer nature was used to translate what happened to the soul. And that was one step away, one step to liberate man, to bring him to mental structure, the word.
The shifting of religion is the same thing. The following religion used the images from the one before for their own perspective.
This, what he's talking about is religion, but it's the origin. The mythical is the origin of religion, because the images of nature are worshipped.
Right.
They are the object of prayer.
Or they are the symbols of the myth. Not necessarily that the sun will be worshipped only as the sun, but as a symbol of the journey of the soul. The soul saw differently the sun. So there is another reality. And if we read Savitri, the entry into the inner countries, the whole symbolism is of this traveling, the descent into the night. Not descent into the night. Physical? No, not physical.
There is one famous example of Egypt where Akhenaten and Hatshepsut, they proposed, they established they put the sun god as the one which was new. And this mythological state, I don't know how to be accurately presented, but it's so much linked with our moment now, the story from 3,000 years ago, now, where the sun was put in the center and closing down this chapter before with the priesthood, from the time before, and turning new relationship to nature in the culture.
Yes, it's the emergence of this mythical structure out of the magic and the establishment of it, legalizing it, making it completely present.
Can we, it's possible to go back to that?
This?
Yeah.
Which paradigm?
The mythical structure where he perceives himself as a soul, okay, the engineering.
Now, what is this primal myth? I wanted to go into it now, just we are on the way, yes? We will kind of look into that more in detail, and what Gebser speaks of, five different myths at least, we will look into them, what they represent, what kind of relations of the soul and its origin. So what, before, I wanted to show also this beautiful transition from the feeling, hearing, speaking, imagining, and thinking, seeing. Look how beautiful it is, hearing as a pervasive oneness with the bigger body of nature, hearing and feeling. When Aureli was making his presentation once on hearing, he said, we are in the womb, we are hearing, we are listening to what is happening there in that world. We don't see it, but we hear everything what Mother says, how she feels, how she moves, what happened, and we retranslate it in our own imagery there, sitting in the womb. In itself, it's an interesting image to start with. We don't see yet. We will see later, but we already fully hear. So that magic structure of hearing, of knowing one's body in a bigger sense, you see how animals react. Cats, when you make a noise. That for them hearing is everything. They are not seeing beings. They are really perceiving their reality through something, through all kind of, you know, they have bigger body somewhere. That's not only that small body that they have. Then imagining is altogether another exercise. It comes from the soul, from another entity within us. So we have an image of the outer reality which we translate our own journey. We will come to it in a moment. So this imagining is coming together with the word. The word comes up together with the emergence of the soul. The soul and the word are one entity. In the Veda at least it's so clear, there is nothing more clear than that. The wave from the heart ocean rises to heaven, this honey wave of Vamadeva, that word emerges out of the darkness. The Agni, the soul, emerges out of the waters. And then finally we have objective seeing and the thinking about the objective life and us as objective beings, as the body. Finally, soul gets its embodiment in material shape as a separate being. Finally, it shapes itself. Now, if you look at this whole picture in this perspective, you will see that we are not living only outside. Mainly, we live inside. Mainly we live in this mythical structure and even magic, because all this what is outside happening is nothing but magic to our consciousness. All these supermarkets are magic. Disneyland. Yeah, amusement parks. So this shift from perceiving inwardly the nature is a part of oneself through feelings and emotions, expressing oneself for the first time as the inner soul by speech and imagination, already different from nature, from within to without, so to say, but still looking back. And he speaks here in a very strange way about mythical structure and compares this with magic in such a essential difference as all the figures here in the book, those who have books, you can see the figures of the magic structure as the face is drawn, eyes, aura and nose, and there is no mouth. All the figures from the magic structure have no mouth. They have nothing to express, nothing to say. They have to perceive and to act within this one body. But they have no yet need of self-expression because this emergence of the soul is not yet there. So, once the soul emerges, you have this big difference. You see this mouth suddenly everywhere in every picture. And it is a particular time. It starts from 1000 BC onwards.
Was it also something to do with the here, like to be here? You don't speak the here and now. And these traditions that tell you, shut up, don't think.
Yes. This is what religion does, what tradition does, shut up. And we know already there is some big establishment, so please join yourself. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Don't be something, you know, in particular. Don't tell us, don't come with your goals into our house. All these things are coming from this magic belief that there is a bigger consciousness of nature, which is meaningful.
It's there in corporations. I'm just in the
yes.
Don't think about which people we are abusing in order to produce your tennis shoes. Right. Just buy your tennis shoes.
Right.
And they'll be there on the shelf when you need them.
For you.
Don't ask too many questions about what's behind this.
So when he comes to this mythical structure's expression in the word and the image which the soul builds out of the magic structure, there are two things which he mentions, which is very interesting about myth, major characteristics. Look at this. The corresponding verb for mythos is mytheomai, meaning to discourse, talk, speak. So myth comes basically from talk, speech. Its root mu means to sound. But another verb of the same root, miein, ambivalent because of the substitution of the short u means to close, specifically to close the eyes, the mouth, and the wounds. Thus the word is always a mirror of inner silence, and myth is a reflector of the soul. The myth has two meanings. From here we have also mystics coming, those who do not really, there's something secret, something inward. You have to close everything down to go back to your origin. But you have also to speak. So the silence and the word, the silence of your origin and the word which is expressing that silence, are both in this word. And he says we should not be mistaken by trying to understand it in our rational way, because it's another way of understanding. We will have to choose one or another. They both are present and both are valid in the same word. The other distinct feature of the mythical structure is that it bears the stamp of imagination, just now we spoke about it. Although still distant from space, it's his quotation, the mythical structure is already on the verge of time. Still distant from space, it is already on the verge of time. The imaginary consciousness still alternates magical timelessness and the natural cosmic periodicity. The farther myth stands removed from consciousness, the greater its degree of timelessness. Its unreflective ground resembles the reverse side of a mirror. The reverse side of the mirror is this black cover. It's a good image. By contrast, the closer its proximity to consciousness, the greater emphasis on time. And this is the dynamism within the mythical structure. So there is the beginning farther from time and closer to the mental structure, closer to time. The intensity grows, the soul discovery. This ambivalent relation between time and timelessness, which defies our rational understanding, once again finds its expression in the polarity of the mythical structure, for both forms simultaneously exist and complement each other. Now, in mythical structure, time and timelessness, their game is going on, and this is ambivalence of it. From the magic structure towards mythical, there was a, it is in itself a transition. And the ambivalence of it is in this transition, from timelessness to time. Full sense, such a rational, clear vision, liberating vision. But he's still far from space, far from the consciousness of space, a separate being. The two contentious aspects of myths, the astral mythological related to the finding of the soul and its journey, and the natural, is being interpreted mostly in sexual erotic terms, for it reflects the relation with the magic structure. And it's quite interesting, you could see this, yes? Both are somewhere there. One is that Tantra yoga, yes? The yoga of the forces of nature, Kundalini Shakti, rising. It is part of the magic belief, magic power, magic structure of consciousness, and the emergence of the soul, or the psychic being, or that what is known in esoteric history as Rama first brought this myth of the emergence of the soul. In esoteric history, there are two major myths. One is myth which belongs to the magic structure, that of the power of nature, or it is called the knowledge of the black race. And the knowledge of the white race, of the Aryan race, I'm using now theosophical terms of Blavatsky, is bringing this emergence of the soul. and they contradict. And you can see it in the zodiac terms. When the ram represents the soul, the oven, the emergence of the soul, lamb, that lamb, divine lamb, Jesus. Or in the Abrahamic terms, when he wanted to sacrifice his son, he hears the voice of the God, bring me white lamb, not necessary to sacrifice the body of the son. This was the shift from magic to the mythical structure. So mythical structure is sacrificing your soul, bringing your soul into action, rather than the power of the body. And both are reflected in myths of these categories. The astro-mythological category of myths, and the journey of the soul, and the interpretation in terms of sexual erotic terms, which belongs more to our magic past, natural being, relations with nature in natural way. Now I stop here, and we will continue next time, because there is already too much, and the second part is even more demanding. These five different myths he looks into, and I want to add many more, few more at least, which we will have to look into, how soul finds itself, through what means, by what imagery it expresses itself in the world, and how we know it now. So here we will pause, we will have some tea break, and then we will come back to the discussion of it.